Welcome to New York Got Game.
Another week, another edition of New York Got Game. Plenty to talk about in the world of basketball with so much went on last week with the New York Knicks. We had a very disappointing week. We will get to that. We've got to talk about St. John's basketball as they got bounced out of the NCAA tournament. More on that later. We're also going to talk on this episode a little bit about the New York Liberty and their offseason so far. It's been a quiet one, but has it been really effective? Got two great guests for today's show. We're not going to waste any time. Let's get right into it.
The Knicks are heating up.
The Knicks, they went 2-2 in four games last week, and it was anything but easy. It was a pretty ugly week, if you ask from Knicks fans. Back-to-back losses to the Spurs and the Hornets, but they did get a win over the Wizards, the worst team in the NBA. So there's a lot of things to talk about the Knicks, including where they are right now and are they in a good place as they try to get ready for the playoffs. So I wanted to bring in somebody who has a ton of perspective on the New York Knickerbocker. She is one of my favorite Knicks content creators, an alum of Clara Barton High School, the best high school in the world. It is Steph from Dope Soul Sports, Knicks Talk, and Queens Court joining me now. Steph, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good, Dexter. I appreciate you joining me. I appreciate you inviting me onto the show.
Well, hey, I am joining you because we are having this conversation together. So we're doing it together. So whether you come on with me, we're doing it together. And that's all that matters. Steph, when you look at this Knicks week, which was 2-2, right? I think you're going to have some fans that feel like this was a really down week. It feels like it could have been one of the low points of the season, specifically as I just mentioned in the intro with the losses back-to-back to the Spurs and the Hornets. What was wrong with the Knicks in those losses back-to-back to the Spurs and the Hornets? What, from your vantage point, what did you see that was wrong with the team?
Yeah, I saw a lack of energy, which could be construed or misconstrued as a lack of urgency, poor shooting, not a lot of bench scoring in both games. I think the Knicks was outscored by 20 points in both games. The shooting, I think they shot 40% from the field and 42% from the field, 30% from three against the San Antonio Spurs, 40% overall and 26%, I believe it was, from the field against the Charlotte Hornets. You're just not going to win that way unless you have a stellar defense that can get stops, and the Knicks don't have that. So between the poor shooting, the lack of bench scoring, the lack of urgency and energy, you know, it was tough for them. And listen, I get it. The Knicks were on a 5-game West Coast swing, I think over 2 weeks. They came home for one game before they had to go back out on the road, back-to-back games. One of them, the first one in San Antonio, in a different time zone. I get it. It's not easy. I'm pretty sure there was some physical fatigue as well. But at this point in the season, everyone is dragging a little bit, right? You're in third place in the Eastern Conference. You're trying to hold pace. This is the time, soft spot in the schedule, so to speak, that despite the fatigue, you want to make hay, right? You have to find a way to win those two games, and the Knicks didn't.
Yeah, that's something I spoke about on our live show on Friday. I said, you got to find a way to win those games. The Knicks didn't. I understand why some of the fan base is very disappointed in what they saw there, Steph. To me, it's understandable. I think you got to find a way, especially because these are some of the non-playoff teams, right, that we know are not going anywhere, not really serious, as I said the other day. We know this. But after those losses, Steph, to two of the worst teams in the league, you know, I think it's fair for some fans, as I just mentioned, to start sounding the alarm about the focus, the identity of this team. Those are two words you've seen come up with the Knicks this season, right? Do they have the focus? And I still think it's fair to question, what is their identity? Do you think it's time to start sounding the alarm about both of those things as this team heads towards the playoffs?
I think it's fair to question their mental toughness. Sounding the alarm might be a little strong, but yeah, I do think, you know, there's been times in this season where I feel like they've gotten over the hump. You know, they'll be down in the game. They'll work their way back. They'll grind out a win. A team is making a push to get back in the game. They'll hit some timely shots. You'll be like, wow, this team is really toughening up from a mental aspect. And then they go out against San Antonio and Charlotte again. I understand the circumstances and lose. And it brings it all back again in terms of how mentally tough is this team. And I think that the jury is still out. You know, I thought they were a mentally tough team after this little skid right here. And we didn't even talk about being up 30 plus points against Washington, giving up that lead, getting it down to, I think it was 4. And, you know, kudos to them. If you want to say kudos against the worst team in the league, they were able to pull out the win. Yeah, I think it is fair to question the mental toughness.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I'm glad you brought up the Washington game because I'm not sure if that's a win. Now, the Knicks ended up taking care of business, as you just mentioned. They win the game, but didn't feel good when you're up 33 and then it gets down to 4. Against the Wizards, it almost doesn't feel like a win at the end, right, Steph? It kind of feels like a little bit of a loss because you didn't, you know, keep your foot on the gas to stay with this team as you should, right? But when you look at what's going on with the Knicks, right, because you mentioned the schedule, Steph, and do you attribute some of the recent struggles to Jalen Brunson's absence? And how encouraged are you? This is a two-part question. How encouraged are you about the fact that we just got some news and an update with his injury, that he's out of the walking boot, he's doing some light shooting and controlled court work? Does that encourage you, thinking that he could come back soon? And how much of what we've seen recently, beside the fatigue, is linked to Jalen Brunson not being there?
Yeah, I think some of it is, right? The Knicks are 4-4 without him, 4-6 over their last 10. He's the best player on this team. He's a clutch, one of the best clutch players in the league, right? And not just down the stretch, but when you have those scoring droughts, which the Knicks have had, he's able to go on a heater, right? And bring you back in the game. And we're missing that. So some of the struggles is because of him, but I'm not giving the Knicks any I'm not letting the Knicks off the hook when it comes to the Charlotte and San Antonio game. With or without Brunson, you got to find a way to win. To the second part of your question, yes, I am encouraged. The Knicks have 12 games left. They're, I think, 3 games ahead of Indiana, just 4 games ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. And we may have to play those games, you know, without Brunson. So if he can get back for any part of that, that will definitely help solidify the third seed in the East. So I am encouraged by the news.
Yeah, Knicks fans got to be encouraged about that. Hopefully Brunson will be back soon. The reports before was him returning later this month or possibly in early April. So we'll see what happens with that. But when we're talking about lapses that we've seen against these lower echelon teams, right, the Spurs and the Hornets, how dangerous is having those lapses, Steph, in terms of playoff readiness, especially in the East, as you mentioned, they're trying to secure this third seed where seeding and matchups could be very important. We'll get to that in a second, but how important is it for them going forward to not have these lapses that we saw last week?
It's very important. And this is the thing. The Knicks have the 5th hardest schedule remaining schedule. Indiana, who's in third place, has the 14th hardest. And Milwaukee, who's in fourth place, has just the 21st hardest. You know, so I don't want to keep harping on, you know, what's already passed. But the Knicks had an opportunity to really solidify that third seed. They still do. It's just going to be harder. They're going to be playing tougher teams than the teams that are behind them.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, Steph, they have Cavaliers. They still got to play the Cavs twice. You mentioned the Bucks. There's still another game with Boston. Now, there's something to be said. I don't know what the Cavaliers and Boston will be playing for at that time and who they're going to be playing and how seriously they take those games. But Knicks still have some work to do. Now, speaking of those matchups, right, and how they don't need to have those lapses, looking ahead, first-round matchup, there's a bunch of possibilities for the Knicks, right? They could play the Pacers. They could play the Bucks. They could play the Pistons. Is there a team you want to see? What do you think is the best matchup for the Knicks in terms of a first-round opponent?
This is a tough one. This is a tough one. I believe we're 2-0 against Indiana, but there's going to be a lot of juice to that matchup if we play Indiana. They're playing well of late. I believe they've won 4 straight. Milwaukee has been up and down. I think we're 2-0 against Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. But any team with Giannis and Dame, right, they can turn it up. in the playoffs. That has to be a concern. And then Detroit, I think we're 1-2 against them. Up and coming team. Cade Cunningham is having his best season, right, of his young career. This is a gritty team. People are going to think I'm crazy, but I would rather meet Detroit only because of the lack of playoff experience. That's it. I'm not taking anything from Detroit and how they're playing, and I think they're eighth in defense. They're a really, really good team. But because of the lack of playoff experience, I'm going to say them. And I don't know why I don't want to see Indiana.
It's probably history, Steph.
The Knicks could beat Indiana, but I don't want to see Indiana.
I get that. I understand that. We were talking about this on the live show the other day, too. And I'm with you on this. I think the Pistons are the best matchup for the Knicks in the first round. Right. It's no disrespect to the Pistons.
Right.
I think they're good, up and coming. We've seen they beat the Knicks twice this season, as you mentioned. Right. Malik Beasley has gone crazy against them. The Knicks did blow them out in the, I think that was the second week of the season. They did blow them out in Detroit, third or fourth game of the season. But where I'm with you is the experience, the lack of experience that the Pistons have. And how does that come into play when they come to, in the Madison Square Garden for games one or two of a series? How is that young team going to respond to that? The Knicks should be able to get the job done. Look, I think the Knicks should get the job done against any of these teams, but you never know. They can't play like they played last week. That's one thing you can say for sure.
that's for sure.
Like they did last week. All right, we talked about some negativity around the team. Let's try to get into some positivity. So being positive against the Wizards, we saw Tyler Kolek. We saw campaign. They did provide a spark in that game, Steph. But I specifically want to talk about Kolek because a lot of Knicks fans have been talking about him. What did you make of his playmaking ability in that game? Because he had 8 assists. And he also seemed, when he came into the game, to control the pace of the game. Mm-hmm. Can the Knicks lean into more of this with Kolek while Brunson is out? Should they do this? Should he get more minutes? Because he gives them that sort of playmaker that can also attack the basket, get deep into the paint. Should they lean into more of Kolek time while Brunson is out with injury?
I would say yes, with the caveat of how much leaning in are we talking? Like if we're talking like 8 to 12 minutes, 14 minutes, I would say yes. If we're talking 20, 25 minutes, I would say no. And it's nothing against Kolek. I love him. I think he's going to be great for the Knicks. And he has been, right? Whenever he's been in the game, he's been a plus for the Knicks. But there's always a learning curve with rookies, right? Particularly point guards. And so the longer you play them, the more consistently you play them. They get better, of course, right, with the time. But there's also more time to see that they need a little more seasoning. So I would like to see him more, but I still think you have to, in my opinion, curtail the minutes. I don't think 20, 25 minutes, but more minutes than he's getting now, yes. Particularly with Brunson out, absolutely. I think it could help us.
Yeah, I like what you saw out of him. And look, I know a lot of Knicks fans have been calling for it. You know, I think Deuce McBride, with him being in the starting lineup, we know what Deuce is. He's a better player off the ball. We know what he can do in terms of a defender. I think in terms of playmaking, that's not really his game. You saw that was Cole's game. I will also pump the brakes and say he did that against the Wizards. So we also need to see what – I'm not saying he can't do it against better competition.
Right, right.
I'm just saying it was the Wizards. So we got to pump the brakes a little bit on that.
Yeah.
Wanted to also talk to you about Mikal Bridges because since Brunson's been out, he's been very efficient, right? In fact, at one point within the last couple of games last week, he had a true shooting percentage over 61%. So my question to you, Steph, is are the Knicks – maximizing his offensive role enough right now without Brunson? And how do you think that looks even when Brunson does come back in terms of Bridges' role in the offense?
I think there are some games where he's maximized and there's some periods of the game in which he's maximized. I still don't think we're maximizing him enough. And people tell me in the chat, I'm too high on Bridges, but I really think that he has a really high ceiling. Obviously he's the third option on the team. It's hard to optimize and maximize a third option when we're whole. But right now, we're not, right? So I would like to see Bridges on the ball more, more offensive-minded. he'll have spurts where if you squint your eye a little bit, you think that's Brunson out there. And then the next thing you know, you don't hear much from him the rest of the way. I'm not sure if that's him being less assertive, the offense just going away from him, Tom Thibodeau not making it a point to feature him. But there is more meat on the bone, so to speak, when it comes to Mikal Bridges that I think the Knicks can and should take advantage of. Now, when Brunson comes back, I think that's going to be hard. Like, if you look at the third options in the NBA, they just get what they get off of the top two, you know, off of the top two players. Unless we're going to change his role in the offense altogether, I'm not sure how we can get more out of him. But I will say this, there is more to be had from Mikal Bridges for sure.
So, and I want to follow up with you on that, just so people understand why, because I think I know what you're saying on this. But when you say there's more to be had on Mikal Bridges, and I know this from you, Steph, it's not about numbers, because you, like you astutely pointed out, a third option is only going to get so much usage, right? And I think Mikal Bridges, for the most of the season, has been around 19% in terms of his usage rate, right? And that's pretty standard for a third option in the NBA. So when you say that you want to see more out of him, what does that look like to you? Is it aggression? Is it getting to the line more? What does that look like for you in terms of more out of Mikal Bridges?
I would caveat this as saying, when Brunson comes back, he's going to be back to being on the ball or on the ball defender in terms of the point of attack. I do think that takes a lot of energy, you know, away from him. I'm not sure how much will be left, you know, on the offensive end, but his attitude, like, to me, he's not as aggressive or assertive as I remember him being in Phoenix in that year when they had injuries, and even in Brooklyn. And I get it, his role has changed, but there's ample opportunities on this team for a third scorer to step up in particular games, in particular moments in games. And I would like to see him stay consistently assertive. I think his impact can be just as big. And we all know, already know about OG Anunoby's impact on this team, whether he scores or not. I think Bridges can have that same two-way impact. But I think part of it is him being assertive and being aggressive on the offensive end.
Yeah, I think that's it. There's been times, I've spoken about it on this show, where Bridges has had smaller guys on him and not taking advantage of him, not punish them. It's more, I'm not the person that's like, he has to have this number of shots. In fact, I'm giving him credit. Since Brunson's been out, he's been tremendously efficient from the field. He shot the ball well again against the Wizards in that game. He's actually been pretty good, but I think it's more about picking his spots and where he can be aggressive and making smaller players play. I do think you bring up a good point, though, Steph, that I think some folks in the Knicks fan base and in the media are not addressing enough, which is, it is hard being the point of attack defender. And being a wing in this league, and so much energy is expounded doing that. So, not making excuses. That's not what I'm saying, but it is challenging, is what I'll say. All right, trying to keep it some positivity. Let's look ahead to the schedule this week, because the Knicks have the Mavericks, Clippers, Bucks. The next Sunday, they play the Trailblazers. All these games are home. So the Knicks are at home for four games in a row after they've been on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a test, even here at home. In your eyes, what must the Knicks show this week in these games for you to feel better about where this team is headed?
Well, going 4-0, including that Portland game, would say a lot.
I'm sure it would.
If they're unable to do that, particularly the three-game week coming up,
win
two of the three. Come out with a sense of urgency. Come out with some energy. Do better. And I've been talking about this all season. I sound like a broken record. Be better when it comes to recognizing what the offense is giving you, what they're taking away. Take advantage of the mismatches. Don't let them hide. Don't let them hide a small on Karl Anthony Towns. Don't let them hide a big on Josh Hart. There are things that you can do to mitigate that. And the Knicks just don't do it enough. They don't do it consistently. And that, to me, talks to me about their process, which needs to elevate a little bit, particularly as we're heading into the playoffs. So, yeah, play with energy. I would like to say shoot well, but you can't always, you know, dictate that. but play with energy, know what the defense is giving you. And if we can get some bench scoring, which is kind of hard, right? Deuce is our bench guy. He's starting now, unless we make a, you know, make a change with campaign. I doubt it'll be Kolick. We need the bench to step up as well.
Yeah, got to keep one thing to keep a note on this week. I'll say for Knicks fans is Deuce McBride. He obviously missed the Wizards game. We'll see how he is with this groin injury and how it will linger. The Knicks are probably going to be cautious with that because they usually are. But that's something to keep an eye on. If he doesn't play, that will mean more minutes for Tyler Kolek, and the Kolek hive will continue to grow. Steph, as you know,
and the campaign hive,
and the campaign hive, that will happen too. You're right. You're right about that. Yeah. A couple more things. A major talking point, and I know you know this, I'm sure you've been talking about it on your shows, among the Knicks fans, particularly right now, is Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Do you think Tom Thibodeau is the right coach to lead this group to where they want to go, to the promised land? And is that a fair question based on how this team has looked? And I'm not going to just say last week, so we're just all in the moment, but since the All-Star break. When you look at how they've looked since the All-Star break, and there has been the disappointing weekend they had where they lost to Cleveland, they lost to Boston, and everybody thought the sky was falling. You got what happened last week. When you take this in totality and what Tibbs did, has done throughout his tenure as Knicks head coach, do you think he's the right person to lead this team to the promised land?
I do until he proves that he isn't. And that's going to happen in the playoffs. It's not going to happen in the regular season. And I hear Knicks fans, he's not a championship coach. None of these championship coaches were championship coaches until they won a championship, right? Tom Thibodeau is going to be, and not just Tom Thibodeau, Jalen Brunson, Carl Anthony Towns, Josh Hart, the front office, will be judged on what they do in the postseason. Now, that being said, I can understand that there's some trends with Tom Thibodeau, right? And you wonder, given those trends, if those trends were to continue in the playoffs, can he be, you know, can he be successful? That remains to be seen. But as far as Tom Thibodeau is the same coach that had the historic offense before the All-Star break. Now, after the All-Star break, the Knicks are not shooting well. They're very Brunson-centric. Which is not something I like. But he's the same coach between, you know, so if he was good enough for that offense, you know, well, to, in all fairness, people were calling for his head even then.
Yeah, they were.
They were calling for his head even then. I think that, you know, they're not playing well right now. This is not the time to talk about changing coaches. He's not a championship coach. These decisions are made based on what you do in the playoffs. And we're going to know soon enough, or we'll have some more information soon enough.
We will have that information. Let me ask you this, too, because I'm sure we'll come back to this. I'm sure we'll talk about this at some point in the summer. But for you, does it matter in terms of that information? Does it matter what, where the Knicks go in the playoffs? Or is it a combination of that and how they look in the playoffs? So I say this. Yeah. For example, if they play Boston and they lose a hard-fought 6 or 7-game series, Steph, in the second round, because that's where they likely would meet Boston now,
right?
Is that different to you as opposed to they lose to Boston in the second round, but they lose in 4 games and they are not competitive or it's a gentleman's sweep? Does it matter how they look against the elites in the East, or is it about they have to get to Eastern Conference Finals where this is successful and Tom Thibodeau has to go? Which one is it for you?
I think it's how they look, but I think it's also nuanced too. Players have to play. Like, I've seen coaches lose their job after a series, and you're like, is the coach's fault that the best player didn't play well? I'll put it that way. You know? So I think, yeah, it's definitely how they look. Also the player showing up to play. And then also the coach, you know, sometimes if you know enough about NBA offenses, I don't, and NBA defenses, you can look and say that, wow, I don't understand that right there. You know, why wasn't this change made? Why wasn't that? So that those in the know can critique the coach as well. So I think it's more nuanced in terms of how much of it was the coach, how much was the players not, you know, showing up. Getting blown out multiple times, though, And the energy and effort not being there, you do have to wonder, are they still listening to the coach? Are they still responding, right? If you know, you're not, you lose in four, but they're all nail biters, or you go out and you get blown out in four games, right? As good as Boston is, they're not 25 points better than the Knicks every single game, right? So, yeah, that would go into the decision whether he would return or not.
Yeah, I think it does matter how it looks, which is, to your point, why we got to wait and see some more information. I'm with you on that. But as we know, longtime native New Yorkers, patience is not always there for the sports fans here in New York. We know this. We've seen this too many. But let's just wait and see. Let's see how it all plays out. Last thing for me, Steph. What's your message to this Knicks fan base right now? Because I think a question coming off of last week and looking at how everything played out is, when you look at this Knicks team, are there growing pains that we just seeing? Is this just growing pains, or is there a bigger red flag that we just can't ignore with this team that may have been here all season long? Like, what do you look at this? This is growing pains into where this team is trying to go. Are there some big red flags and saying, hey, there's some issues here that need to be addressed?
I think it's both, right? I think with any championship team, they've all went through some things, so to speak, including failure, right? To forge themselves as a team. And the Knicks are in that process right now. So that's part of it. But I think there are some, you know, some red flags. One, I'm not sure what happened after the All-Star break, but this Brunson-centric offense, in my opinion, is not a championship type offense. It's just not dynamic enough. So I think that's a red flag right there. Like, what has happened to the offense that was free flowing with player movement and ball movement, where teams have to pick their poison? You know, they were passing, they were spacing for passing lanes, cutting lanes, driving lanes. So, you know, you want to take away the paint? We have 3-point shooters. You know, you want to take away the 3-point shots? We have players who can cut. And not only that, we have other players that can deliver the ball when they cut. What happened to that offense? That's the type of offense that does well in the playoffs. Now, can the Knicks go on a heater where it is Brunson-centric and everyone is just shooting lights out? So if they do double Brunson and everyone is hitting shots for 16 games, and you're going to win a championship. Right. But what's the chances of that happening? So the offense is a red flag for me. But also part of it, in my opinion, is also the roster. When you optimize the Knicks lineups for offense, and we've seen this, you're giving up a lot defensively. Right. You put your best offensive team out there, even with the player and ball movement, you're giving up a lot defensively. You optimize the lineups for defense, you're giving up a little offensively. Now, you might be able to get away with that depending on who you're playing, but the deeper you go into the playoffs, the tougher the teams you play, and you can't score the ball because you got your defensive lineup in there, or you can't get stops because you have your offensive line, it's going to pose problems. So I do think there may need to be some roster tweaking in the offseason as well.
I agree with both points you made. One of the things I've been saying all season long with this Knicks team, and I understood Knicks fans don't want to hear it, but I think this team was always more likely to be better next season than it is this season. But I understand everybody wants tomorrow yesterday. I get that. Other point you made that I thought was really good when you talk about the offense being a red flag, and I agree with you, Steph. And so I have one follow-up for you on this before we wrap. With the offense being a red flag and the offense being way too heliocentric, right? Way too Jalen Brunson-centric.
Right.
How much of this in the regression in the offense has been with Josh Hart in the starting lineup and his unwillingness to shoot and let it fly? And you mentioned this earlier, teams are putting centers on him. I forget who did this stat. I apologize, but there's somebody who tracks this and says, Josh Hart is the player that I think teams have put the center on the most out of anyone in the league that is under, I think, like 6'8", right? So how much of that is a problem for the offense? And do you think that needs to be fixed with a lineup change? Is it due starting? That's something fans have talked about. How much of is the problem within the roster?
Yeah, I'm not sure why so much of a problem now, and it wasn't a problem prior to the All-Star break. And part of it was that he was less hesitant prior to the All-Star break, and he was shooting a career percentage, I believe, prior to the All-Star break. So I'm not sure what stopped with Josh Hart. I think he does better in the lineups in which Cat is there, you know, providing, you know, space for him to do what he does in the key. So I'm not sure what happened, but to your point, this is where we are now. And I think it is an issue. I do think it's something the Knicks can do to mitigate that. Like, they can put, you know, Josh Hart in pick and rolls, right? Get that center in action. Like, there's different things the Knicks can do to mitigate that they don't do enough. As far as lineup changes are concerned, the Knicks can do that. I mean, we don't have enough time to get into this, but I will say that there is a culture to basketball, just like there is a culture to the Catholic Church, just like there's a culture to the military. Mm-hmm. And when you're making changes, you can't just make changes because this is what the on-off numbers say. And 2 months from now, the on-off numbers say something else, so we're going to make this change. Who are you making this change for? You know, how connected are you to the person you're making that change for? How connected are they to the other team? What's your relationship? Like, these things aren't happening in a vacuum, and particularly in the NBA, where you having the support as a coach of your best players goes a long way in terms of you keeping your job. Now, I'm not saying that coaches should not do what's best for the team, but I'm saying that there is timing, you know, and taking other factors into account matters as well.
This is something I've been saying all season long too. We're on the same page as this. The people stuff matters, right? It's not, you're not taking players in a roster, they're just a bunch of robots, and you just like, we're going to move this and move that, and this is always going to work when you do this. I think what you're saying around this, feelings matter, loyalty to coaches matter. Now, can coaches be too loyal? Can players be too loyal?
Yes, absolutely they can. Yes.
No doubt about that. Yes. But, and should, I think what we're not saying, so we could just be clear on this, and you tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Steph, but we're not saying that coaches should be stubborn. You know, we're not saying that at all. We're just saying sometimes it's a process of things, and you don't make changes all the time for change's sake, right? And information matters too. To take another word that you brought up, Steph, right?
Right.
We can get information, see it over a large sample of time, process that information, and then adjust. And that's why I'll say this in closing. The Knicks fans, I think Steph answered this the right way. Are there some red flags? Absolutely. Are all the red flags going to be fixed by the end of the season? Probably not. Is that okay? Yeah, because it's part of the process. Maybe not as quick as everybody would like, but it is part of the process. Part of the process is we get to talk about it. We get to talk about the Knicks and see how they do this week. Hopefully, like Steph said, they could have a 4-0 week. It would be really nice after that 2-2 week that we saw last week. That is Steph of Dope Soul Sports Talk, Knicks Talk, excuse me, and Queens Court. Check her out there. Fantastic job. Steph, second time you've been on Got Game this year.
Yes, I appreciate it.
I appreciate you rocking with me and coming on and talking about it. And hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be a little happier overall around the Knicks. You know, where it's orange and blue skies and everybody's feeling good.
And we're moving into the second round or even the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I want to hear. Yeah. Thank you, Steph. Appreciate you.
Of course.
The Liberty are heating up.
All right. Also this week on New York Got Game, we're going to be talking about the New York Liberty, the 2024 WNBA champions. They are the defending champs. They're looking to go back-to-back in 2025. But we're going to talk about their offseason, how it's gone so far, because so much has happened, from injuries to some key players, also some new additions on the roster. But the real question around the Liberty in this offseason is, have they done enough to win it all again in 2025? We're going to answer that question and so much more with one of my favorite voices around the W. His name is Kevin Lewis. He is the co-founder of the 9450. He also is a contributor to the local W, where he does some great work. And Kev joins me now. Kev, what's going on, man?
Hey, Dex. It's always great. Always a pleasure being on. I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. You know what it is? Look, basketball never stops, as you know, and I know, and I'm very thrilled that the W season is approaching us. We're still in the middle of Women's March Madness. We still have the WNBA draft coming up. And before you know it, it's training camp. It's the start of the season. And we're going to be back to talking W hoops full time. But we're going to talk about this Liberty offseason. And where I wanted to start, Kev, is with the health of some players around the Liberty. Now, the Liberty, one of the most important players, undeniably, is Breonna Stewart. She underwent knee surgery, a minor knee procedure. But how do you think just the fact her undergoing this minor knee procedure, how does that impact the Liberty and her availability for this team at the start of this 2025 season?
Well, first off, that's a great first question. And I do believe that from the injury standpoint, I don't think it's going to impact too much of what the Liberty is trying to do in regards to repeating as WNBA champions. Of course, with that procedure, she decided to wait to have that procedure based off of her unrivaled season. She had a pretty okay unrivaled season, but to have that actual surgery, she wanted to be fresh and ready to go by training camp. So I don't think it's going to impact too much. The biggest thing surrounding that, I don't think it was too much of a concern. So when it comes to that particular surgery, that particular procedure itself, being that it's a minor procedure, I don't think it's going to impact too much of what the Liberty is trying to do in regards to repeating.
Yeah, and that should be welcome news to the fans of the Liberty. And the Liberty have said that they do expect Breonna Stewart to be ready for the start of training camp. So that is great news for there. Now, also, the other player in terms of injuries you got to talk about with the Liberty is Benaja Laney Hamilton. She suffered an injury that we still don't know a whole lot about. This happened during the unrivaled season as well. Now, Kev, the thing with Benaja Laney Hamilton is she's such a really good two-way player. She's a fantastic two-way player. We know what she can do on both ends. How important is it for the Liberty that she is right, if it's not by training camp, but at some point near the start of the season? And how integral is she to trying to go back-to-back with her two-way ability?
Absolutely. Now, Benaja Laney Hamilton is definitely a different story when it comes to her injuries and the history of her injuries. Now, we know that in the beginning, we've seen her have many injuries in her New York Liberty stint. However, she has been able to be resilient and come back from those injuries. But this one in particular, we do want to kind of have some concern about because of the history. But again, as a professional, I think that Benaja Laney Hamilton will be okay coming into this season. We don't know the timeline. And again, she did sustain that injury during the unrivaled season as she was one of the call-ins and not one of the original members of Unrivaled at the start of the unrivaled season. But again, when we're looking at Benaja Laney Hamilton's history of injuries, we want to make sure that she is fresh because she is indeed one of the most important pieces and will be an even more important piece in their title defense run in 2025. So this type of injury, we do want to be a little more concerned about, but because we know her recovery history, she has been such a great type of player to recover so well from those type of injuries. I think we should also be okay in that regard if you're a Liberty fan.
She has recovered well. We saw that last year where she had a minor knee procedure. I believe it was right before the Olympic break, if I remember correctly. And then she returned for the final month of the season and then played into the playoffs, obviously, towards the Liberty winning the championship. And look, Kevin, anytime we're about to dive into the roster, anytime you're looking at a team that won a title in a salary cap sport, it is hard to bring everybody back. The Liberty were not able to do that. Courtney Vandersloot leaves the team. They lose Kayla Thornton in the expansion draft. And I want to specifically talk about Kayla Thornton because she was a glue player. We know what she brought, especially on the defensive end for this team. How big of a loss is it going to be with her now going over to the Valkyries? How much of a loss is that for this Liberty squad?
I think from a camaraderie standpoint, it is for sure a huge loss. If we look at Kayla Thornton's production towards the end of the season, more importantly in the finals, her minutes did dwindle a little bit due to that lack of production. However, when we're talking about a locker room presence, when we're talking about someone who is a vocal leader for that New York Liberty team, being there for the 2 years, for the two finals runs that they already have accomplished, one in 2024 where they lost to the Las Vegas Aces, and then another, in 2023 to the Las Vegas Aces, and then last year winning against the Minnesota Lynx. That camaraderie and that leadership, the vocal part of it, is very important for that squad. So that part of it, I think, is going to be a huge loss. But from a production standpoint, I think that in this retrospect, and we will be talking about this a little bit later, I think from a roster standpoint, a makeup standpoint, I think that the New York Liberty has made up for a little bit of that versatility and a little bit of that production, especially when you have the ascension of Alayoni Fibish, who was spectacular in the finals last year. So I think her production, along with some of those added names that we're getting ready to talk about, I think that from a Liberty standpoint, that they will be okay production-wise.
All right, so you think they're going to be fine production-wise, and we talked about the subtractions. Now we have to talk about the additions, and one of the major additions, if you will say, of the offseason happened just recently, and that is Liberty traded for Natasha Cloud. What do you think she can bring to this Liberty team, and her veteran leadership and toughness? How does that fit into Sandy Brondello's system with this Liberty squad?
It's going to be very important. Natasha Cloud recently came into a situation where she was traded to the Connecticut Sun in a deal with Alyssa Thomas. And she did feel like it was more of a blindside, not from a business standpoint, but just from a communication standpoint. So she have recently now been traded to the New York Liberty for the 7th pick in a future pick for the New York Liberty first round. And I think that she's going to come in very, very rejuvenated. She's going to come in hungry. Again, a veteran leader. She has been a WNBA peak performer for a very long time, a 2019 WNBA champion with the Washington Mystics. So with her coming in, bringing in her toughness, her defense, and her IQ, I think this is going to be a major upgrade at that point guard spot. And I think that the versatility that Jonathan Kolb has always preached about, especially last year, and what they found in that formula with adding that Leonie Fibish pick. And I think that overall, this particular pickup for the New York Liberty has been a major upgrade for the New York Liberty. And we also have a few more pickups to talk about in free agency in Izzy Harrison. So I think that from the trade standpoint, it was a very good trade. I think this trade was supposed to happen all along, even since the trade for Natasha Cloud to the Connecticut Sun. So I think it's going to work out pretty well.
I'm going to give you one follow-up on that trade, because there might be some people to look at what the Liberty gave up in this trade. They did not have to give up any roster players on the roster. They did give up this year's pick in the WNBA draft, which is 7th overall, and they gave up their first rounder next year. Do you think the Liberty possibly may have given up too much for the veteran in Natasha Cloud, or was that a fair price?
I think it was a fair price from this perspective. I think that the New York Liberty are in win now mode, and they can be in win now mode for the next 2 to 3 years. Obviously, they will be competing with some really, really good teams in the WNBA, especially the Las Vegas Aces, who are trying to look to come back into that championship form after losing to these New York Liberty in the semifinals last year. So that is going to be a tough road ahead. However, with the roster makeup that Jonathan Kolb has assembled, he has done a very good job already having Bonai Jelani Hamilton under contract, already having Sabrina Ionescu under contract. So with that and having those year deals coming in, he has done an amazing job in assembling this roster for the next 2 to maybe 3 years. And again, we also have additions in Isabel Harrison and a re-sign in MJ, which is, I'm blanking on her name.
Oh, Marine Johannes. We got it.
And Marine Johannes, I think that it's going to be great for the New York Liberty within the next 2 to 3 years. And of course, everything from a win now perspective, we can see come in a really high risk, low risk, high reward type situation.
Yeah. I like Natasha Cloud as a player. I think she's a fantastic pick. You and I were texting about this last week and how we like her fit and what she can bring to this Liberty team. And Jonathan Cope, you know, one of the things he's talked about, you just mentioned, is versatility over the last couple of years, the ability to have players that can play both ways. And that is something he values very much. You saw the Liberty do that, shaping their roster last year. You've seen the emphasis on that this year. And that brings me to the next player that I wanted to talk about that you just mentioned, and that's Isabel Harrison. And one of the other things we know about from Jonathan Cope is he likes depth. And Isabel Harrison could help here with the front court depth. How big of a role do you see Izzy Harrison playing, especially in light of Breonna Stewart's injury, although we talked about the procedure being minor, and the Liberty, I'm surely, we saw this last year, want to manage her minutes in the front court and make sure she's not having too much of a heavy load. So what kind of role do you see Izzy Harrison playing here for the Liberty this season?
I see Izzy playing a huge role. And the reason why is we see that Isabel Harrison, she has also suffered a number of injuries, but she is fully healthy. I was able to speak with her at Athletes Unlimited in Nashville. She looks fully rejuvenated. She looks fully recovered. And shout out to her, the mayor. We call her the mayor of Nashville. But I think that because she has that versatility with her length, her defense, her shooting ability, and her IQ back to the basket as well, she can be an incredible cross match and an incredible complementary player to Breonna Stewart, who, again, is a year older as well. And I think that she will help alleviate a lot of the heavy minutes that we've seen Breonna Stewart play in the last 2 years in a Liberty uniform. So with that being said, Isabel Harrison has been a great pickup for the New York Liberty, and I think she can make a major impact, especially when the WNBA and WNBA teams are moving up to another 44 games. So I think that from a rest standpoint, she will be able to relieve Breonna Stewart of a lot of those minutes. And I think that she will be a really, really big piece for this New York Liberty squad.
Yeah, that's also another good point, going up to 44 games, about that management throughout the season for a lot of these teams. Also another team in the league this year in the Valkyries. So that's just another thing that teams have to worry about in terms of roster management. Now, another player that you mentioned is back with the Liberty. Liberty fans should be very familiar with this player. She did not play last year due to the Olympics. She was playing for the French national team. But Maureen Johannes, we know what Maureen Johannes can do. We know she can shoot the basketball. Back with the Liberty in a one-year deal. How valuable is it, not just her shooting, Kev, but also her playmaking, which she is very good at doing too, off the bench for this Liberty squad? And do you think we'll see her take on a bigger role here in 2025 that we maybe even saw in 2023?
Absolutely. And the same way that I think that Isabel Harrison is going to be used for Breonna Stewart, I think the same can be said from Maureen Johannes and Sabrina Ionescu. Mm-hmm. And when you also add in a Natasha Cloud, that is going to help tremendously from a defensive standpoint, because Maureen Johannes doesn't have to necessarily guard the best guard on the opposite team. So with her playmaking ability, with her passing, with her shooting, I think is going to be very, very pivotal for the New York Liberty to use Maureen Johannes in the way that she's always been used, and is going to be even greater looking at that pick and roll and pick and pop depth. Now that you have an extra shooter where you see Maureen Johannes probably coming off of those Iverson cuts and coming off of those pin downs where she can easily catch and shoot. And when she can easily have the ball in her hands in a high pick and roll setting with a JJ, I just think that is going to be amazing in looking at how dynamic this team can be from a half court standpoint and also from a fast break standpoint. As you know, the New York Liberty, they weren't in the highest percentages when it comes to pace, but Maureen Johannes adding that dynamic and also adding a Natasha Cloud who is able to push the ball, who are both able to push the ball, I think it's going to be amazing for the New York Liberty this season. And I think that that pace will increase just a little bit. So all in all, I think that this will be an incredible season for the New York Liberty, and Maureen Johannes, Natasha Cloud, Isabel Harrison, they're going to be important pieces, as we know, coming into the season.
Yeah, Kev, it feels like before the Natasha Cloud trade, you know, for the Liberty, it felt like, I will say this because I think this can sometimes work in sports, it felt like a quiet offseason, right? Maybe some under the radar moves. And you had the Izzy Harrison signing, then you had the Cloud trade. Maureen Johannes just came back last week. So it's not a loud offseason, I would say, except for the Natasha Cloud trade. But I feel like it's a quiet offseason. Sometimes quiet is good. So with all that said, my final thing to you is, when you look at the moves the Liberty have made this offseason, do you think they've retooled enough to make a serious run at the title here and try to go back-to-back in 2025?
Absolutely. Barring any significant injuries to any of these key players, I think they are poised to repeat as the WNBA champions. I also do believe that they do have enough depth. They had such a great and quiet offseason, when we have to remember they still have about 360,000 in cap space to still play with, even with the potential re-signing of Breanna Stewart, which we all know that's going to happen. But they still have a little bit more money to kind of play with all of those players still under contract, and then the re-signing of a Maureen Johannes, and then those signings of, you have Isabel Harrison, and then the trade, of course, for Natasha Cloud. So cap space is not an issue for this team. And I think that with that, Jonathan Kolb has done an amazing job, and I think they are poised to repeat as WNBA champions.
All right. Well, Liberty fans will like to hear that. It was a fantastic year covering the Liberty last year. Parade was fun. Season was fun. Should be another fun one, not just for the Liberty, but throughout the W. So we'll see what they can do here in 2025. A lot more to talk about the Liberty. Kevin will be definitely rejoining us here on New York Got Game to talk about the Liberty. Please check out the work of Kevin Lewis, co-founder of the 9450, also contributor to the local W, does such a great job there. Kev, I appreciate you coming on to talk well and not quietly, loudly about the Liberty's so-called quiet offseason. I appreciate that, man. It's been good to talk about the offseason. I'll definitely have you back on soon to talk some more Liberty hoops.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Dex. And of course, I think we can all say that Dex and Dot, we're back at it again, right?
Yo, I like it. Back at it again. It's about to be that season. So get ready. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you.
So a very interesting week coming up for the New York Knicks. We talked with Steph about the four games that they have this week. Can they go 4-0? Talked about the fact they have to face the Mavericks. Then they will face the Clippers back-to-back at home Tuesday and Wednesday. Then they've got the Bucks and the Trailblazers. So very, very interesting week for the Knicks. They really need to bounce back. They really need to show something. We'll keep you updated on the health of Jalen Brunson. Also, Deuce McBride, another player to keep an eye on. As far as the Liberty go, definitely got to keep an eye on what else they do this offseason and how healthy they can be coming into a training camp. We are going to have more Liberty talk and ramping up on this show in the coming weeks. And before I leave, we got to talk about St. John's basketball. They are bounced by Arkansas in the second round on Saturday. And look, for me, I expected St. John's to go a bit further. This was a magical ride for the team this season. They set records. They won the Big East regular season title, the Big East tournament title. I think a lot of people saw them at least as a Sweet 16 team. So it's a little bit disappointing they didn't get there. But I think when you put everything in perspective and you look at what Rick Pitino has done in his 2 years as the head coach here in St. John's, you got to be excited about the future. Look, the Garden was rocking again when St. John's had home games there. Carneseca Arena also was rocking. And we know the great Lou Carneseca, who passed away earlier this season, would be very proud of what this St. John's team did. And there's a culture here at St. John's. And there's a winning culture here at St. John's. And college basketball has expectations here in New York. And that's something to be excited about. You know, Rick Pitino is going to look to add players through the transfer portal, is going to look to try to recruit other players to come here. And I think the biggest thing about St. John's being back, if you want to say that, in New York, is you're going to have younger players who want to come and play at St. John's, who want to play in the Garden, who want to be a part of what's going on here, and particularly kids who play in New York, that are from New York, that are from the boroughs and play here in the city. They are now going to look at St. John's as a viable option because you've seen them win. And you see what special could be. And now St. John's, look, they won the Big East regular season title, as I mentioned. They won the Big East tournament title. Next year, depending on how their roster looks, a lot's going to be talked about, okay, what can St. John's do to be a true national championship title contender? They were a 2 seed in the West this year, and they fell short. But I think if you're a fan of the Johnnies, there's still a ton to be proud about with this team and a lot of optimism for the future. That's going to do it for this week's show. As always, thanks to the people. We did this one from home, but we got to thank the people that make this show look fantastic. Production assistant Tommy Cohen doing a great job here. Also, my production assistant Jeff Stansberry with a great job on this. Editor Corey Porter and producer Nick Federico on this one. I'm Dexter Henry. We'll be back next week with another episode, the final one of March for New York Got Game. We'll see you then.
And thanks for watching New York Got Game. Boom shakalaka.